All right. Hello again, and welcome to Comics Rule Everything Around Me, a podcast within a podcast about comics and stuff, you know, whatever. It's been a minute since we did one of these, but the last one was also Superman related because we were talking about Action Comics number 1000. And this week we are talking about the next big Superman thing, which is Man of Steel number one. It's a 6-issue weekly miniseries written by Brian Michael Bendis. And the first issue is art by Ivan Reis, I believe, with a 2-page epilogue thing by Jason Fabok. Obviously here to talk with me about it is my buddy Matt.
Hey.
And boy, you know, we said from the beginning, we're just going to jump right into this. We said from the beginning, as soon as it was announced that Bendis was coming to DC, we were like, the one thing I at least was very much like, the one thing I don't want him to do is Superman. And then as when they announced that not only is he doing Superman, he's taken over both Superman books, and they're going to be do a big relaunch with him taking over the books and with this 6-issue weekly miniseries to not only to sort of set up what the new status quo going forward will be, but also to parallel the 1986 John Byrne Superman miniseries called The Man of Steel, which
followed Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Yeah, and set up the new status quo for Superman there. Having read the first issue, the second issue just came out today, but we're not going to talk about it today. We're just going to talk about the first issue. But I'll say also, just to, we were both, you know, as apprehensive as we have been, Brian Michael Bendis has definitely said some things that made me want to try to be cautiously optimistic.
Sure.
And
Bendis, he's written some of my favorite comics. Yeah, some of my least favorite comics. It's a mixed bag.
It's definitely not a knock on him. It's just like, to me, his sensibilities are never one that I would put with Superman. But, you know, like I said, he said some things in all the interviews and like when people ask him questions at cons about like what his take on some of this stuff would be. And I want Superman always to be a big deal. And this is a very big deal series. Also, I just looking at the cover, I realized I got the names backwards. This miniseries is called The Man of Steel. The John Byrne one from 1986 is called
A Man of Steel.
Yeah, it's just Man of Steel. So, initial impressions after reading the first issue, do you feel more cautiously optimistic? Do you feel...
I was overall positive on it.
Okay.
I had an overall positive impression. Again, if I could have... I think they didn't lead well with that Action Comics story.
They should have just started with this.
And I think if they would have led with this, I'd feel better.
I know they wanted to have something by him and Jim Lee in that Action 1000, but
the DC Nation Zero, I guess it's not a backup story. His third of the story in that didn't really grab me.
Yeah.
But starting with the Man of Steel, it's overall positive.
Neither of those made me more excited about reading this, but I guess I was more. They made me curious, but also like I was gonna get this. I was gonna get this and read this no matter what. So I would have liked to have gone into it with a little bit more excitement instead of just curiosity. My overall was like, okay, all right. There's some stuff, but there was definitely a number of times where I was rolling my eyes at some of the sort of like Bendisisms. That are things just like, oh, you got to have this, of course, because it's a Brian Michael Bendis comic. I don't know. I don't want to be negative about it because it was kind of like, there was stuff that I really liked. And then there was stuff that made it feel like he's really trying to show us that, no, look,
I get Superman.
Yeah, like I'm going to do a Superman you like. This is the Superman you like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, this is the Superman you like, in a Brian Michael Bendis world, right, where there's like going to be all these other things that are like, make me feel a little anxious.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you want to, let's talk about some specifics, talk about the plot of the issue.
Sure. So something else, yeah, I would say as we get into the plot, the Bendis style decompression is definitely present.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, that's what this series is going to be. It's a simpler story, you know, spread out over.
Really stretched out for no real good reason.
As far as like the meat of it, there's going to be these fun little moments, but I think the meat of the story is going to be spread out, you know, over the arc. The big questions that I came into this wanting answered, I can already tell are not going to be answered until the end of this series, if not on into.
I don't think that we'll get the answers to them. I think that it'll be like more just teasing out.
Yeah.
So this is why you've got to read my other two books that are coming out. And I feel like this thing being six issues, the way this first one ran, is definitely just it's a way to stretch it out, to give themselves more time to get those first issues ready of the other two. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, maybe so. Yeah. Just some lead time.
And it's also the kind of thing where...
this is just setting the stage for what he's really going to do in Superman in Action.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing where you could have more stuff happen in each issue and only have this be like four issues.
Yeah.
What I was going to say earlier, in comparison to this, I reread, right after I read this, I reread Man of Steel, number one, by John Byrne. And man... a lot happens in that one. And I think they both kind of stack up for me. Like the experience was similar as far as my enjoyment went,
mm-hmm.
but it was definitely, man, a lot more goes on in that Man of Steel number one, as opposed to this. So
big things he does. He sets up his new villain, Rogal Zaar.
sure.
Which we already saw him in Action Comics 1000, but it's kind of setting him up a little bit.
So real quick, yeah, I was going to say real quick, run us through the plot sort of, and the broad strokes and sort of just the plot, what we get in this first issue. And folks, obviously, if you haven't read it yet, let's just get that out of the way real quick. Would you recommend this as a first issue?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm overall positive on it. You know, time will tell if it ends up being a satisfying overall story, but I think it's a satisfying issue.
I would also recommend it. Just give it a try, see what you think. The art is fantastic.
Sure. Top notch.
Complete, yeah, absolutely top notch. And like we said when they announced this thing, a murderer's row of fantastic artists. You know, every issue of this is somebody else that's
just because of the height Bendis has risen to, he gets A+ artists. You know, that's
regardless.
That's not going to be the problem ever on one of his books is the art.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they went this route with it, really treating this like this is as big a deal as I would want it to be.
Right.
Like, this is a big move. This is a big Superman thing. So I want Superman to have this caliber of art. Just in general. I mean, Superman should be one of their top tier books all the time.
Right. The cover's really nice too. Did they do variants with this one or I don't remember seeing a lot of
I don't remember. I wanna say yes, because there's the like the interlocking covers, and then I'm sure that there's variants for they wouldn't want to pass that up.
Yeah.
That opportunity up.
Overarching plot of this issue, we get some flashbacks to set up the new villain and his desire to wipe out Kryptonians. He appears before a galactic council, which is something that's new to DC. That's not something we've seen done. We've seen stuff like that in Marvel before.
Yeah.
You know, specifically,
the concept's not new, but we've never seen this. I mean, there've even been like sort of galactic councils of people in DC previously, but this is very much, we haven't seen, this one is new to us, unless there's something both of us have missed.
Right, right. I've never seen anything like this before. It did remind me a lot of, Bendis just came off of doing Guardians of the Galaxy with Marvel, and he had a council of representing different alien races. It was kind of similar, but these seem to be, whereas those are more villainous characters, these seem to be like protectors, maybe a precursor to the...
Well, and you've got like one of the Guardians,
right?
The right. DC's Green Lantern style Guardians in there.
Yeah, and whether he's operating in concert with the others or he's his own guy, it remains to be seen. But so he's appealing to them, saying the Kryptonians need to be wiped out. He makes a case, but...
And this is set pre-Krypton blowing up.
Right, yeah, this is a big flashback. And then the stuff present day, there's an arsonist or arsonists in Metropolis setting fire to buildings. So Superman rounds up some of them. He helps rescue people from a fire. We see a little bit of the Daily Planet and the new status quo there. And then just a brief tease of the question, what happened to Lois and John? Which is the only question I want answered. And I have a feeling they're going to tease out forever, which I don't like.
Yeah. And then that's it.
That's it.
That's all that happens in the issue. So by comparison, the first issue of Man of Steel, number one, starts, we get a 10-page or an 8-page, chapter one is like an 8-page thing on Krypton's, like basically he runs through Superman's origin as far as he got sent.
Right.
This is what happened on Krypton. So John Byrne spends 8 pages really running down all this stuff, like introducing a new version of Krypton. Because this, you know, we kind of take it for granted that there have been all these sort of different iterations. But mostly until this, Krypton was sort of a sci-fi city, like or sci-fi planet of good-natured superhero kind of people, looking kind of people. Mm-hmm. They all had those kind of like interesting outfits and yada yada, and you know, but they were all, you know, Superman had done, there had been like stories where Superman got to go back in time or stuff where, and his parents were all, it was all very like, oh, you're making us so proud, son. And
right,
you know, and then this completely sort of recontextualizes Krypton as this emotionless, completely science-based world where they've kind of scienced out, they realize that it's very logic, not to like the level of Vulcans or something, but it's very much like we're just about this and this and whatever. There's no room for emotion. Everything's very logical. People have these not the important, but it completely, much like how this sort of gives a new take on what was going on with Krypton and why Krypton exploded. This one explained it has its own reason for what's going on with Krypton, why it blows up, why Superman gets sent away, you know, obviously to save his life, but this changes the thing where in a lot of Superman stuff, he's a baby and his parents, you know, like in the movie, it's, you know, his parents love him so much they want to send him away.
Did the movie come out before Superman Man of Steel?
Oh, yeah. Superman came out in 78.
So he was probably influenced maybe or informed a little bit by that with maybe the look and style of Krypton?
No, I would say not at all because
he went his own way with it.
Yeah, his version of Krypton, you know, like the Richard Donner Superman movie, Krypton is like all crystalline.
Yeah.
And there's probably some stuff in there, but I mean, like, this is Krypton to Byrne. Like,
yeah, really different.
And then this is what people, he went really sci-fi with it.
The black skull caps and robes.
It's like they're wearing full body black. And this all ended up playing into his like first year on the book. You know, like he used a lot of this stuff.
Well, even the style is far forward as the death of Superman. That's still the style that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When they showed Kryptonian people.
Yeah. And they, this really changed it for years and years. And, you know, this was. You know, introduce stuff like the robot, like that Superman has and yada, yada. I'm trying to just like fly through this, but and we see all that stuff plus Krypton blowing up. Then you get Superman as a teenager in Smallville and he's great at sports and he's popular and then ended up having this whole, you know, it's another 9 pages of him or 10 pages of him learning that he, seeing what he's like as a teenager, like sort of what and completely changing Superman again. It wasn't.
Is he even Superman yet by the end of the first issue?
No.
Okay.
Well, by the end of the first issue, I was going to say at the end of the, I would say the one thing that John Byrne, the advantage John Byrne has over this is that his issue has, instead of, what is it?
22 pages.
His is, he had 31 for the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, I'm pretty sure this was also a weekly series, and John Byrne did it all.
He wrote and
drew it. Yeah. And was did the whole all six issues, as opposed to what's going on with this, where there's like unannounced fill-in within this thing that they had already announced, and it which that's a whole other topic.
Right.
But in this, so then you've got like another 10 pages where he's learning about, we see what he's like. You see the actual conversation that he has with his dad, where they his dad explains like, you know, this is where you came from. And Clark is like 17, 18 at this point. Mm-hmm. He's like a senior in high school and he knows he's different, but it isn't literally until this that he finds out that he's an alien. But he still doesn't know he's from Krypton. He doesn't know. He's just like, his dad finally takes him to this place and he's like, yeah, that's what we found you in. And they kind of explain what happens. And then the rest of the issue, the sort of the third act of the issue is back in Smallville and it's years later and his Ma and Pa Kent are there and they see the headline in the Daily Planet of this experimental space plane rescued by mysterious man. Mysterious, I mean, in the headline it even says mysterious Superman saves space plane. But he's not Superman yet. He's just a guy who's trying to like do things and help, but be completely under the radar.
Was he in costume for the space plane?
He's just wearing clothes. He's just hanging out. He's been all over the world. You find out also he's been all over the world sort of in the last 8 years or whatever, learning about things and, you know, meeting people and just trying to help out wherever he can, trying to find like where he can do the most good. And, you know, they see this and they're like, oh my gosh, everyone's going to, cause it's got a whole thing where his mom is saying, she's got like a scrapbook of articles of like, oh, miracle saves kid that falls out a window or whatever, you know, like, all this stuff where it's like, no one can say for sure that it was a person that helped them, but it's like something when something just miraculously happens, she's like, I bet that was him.
Right.
And so she's saving all this. And then he comes back home and he's just really shaken up by the fact that like he was in Metropolis because he just had, in his travels, he decides that Metropolis is kind of like a good place to, but he's not being Superman. He's just being a guy. And then, like, when he can help out, he does.
He's out there doing Good Samaritan.
Yeah. And then stuff. All of a sudden, this problem happens with this huge space plane. And he's like, everyone's just seeing it happen and it's going to crash and there's nothing he can do. He doesn't have time to, like, try. He's like, there's nothing I can do. And he just takes off straight up out of this crowd, just flies and lands it. And as soon as this is like very reminiscent of. Superman saving that plane, the Air
Superman
Force One.
Returns.
No. Well, it's very reminiscent of Superman saving the plane in Superman the movie,
okay.
Air Force One, but also the part with like how he saves Lois in that helicopter, like his first night. You know, he does both of those things, but it's got that part where like the person looks out the window of the plane and is like, I'm not saying what, there's something, I'm not saying what it is, but just keep flying, you know, like let's just. And this has got a combination of that sort of where, you know, he saves Lois on that helicopter then also. And then she's like immediately gets out and is just like, who are you? You know, she has that first immediate reaction with him. Like his debut night has that first because the first thing he does as Superman in the movie is save that helicopter that she's in. And then the thing with the plane. But then that is, reflected in this. And then, which is then also reflected in Superman Returns when they make it a much bigger deal where there's a space plane and an airplane and yada, yada.
Which is, I think, probably still the best scene in that movie.
Oh, absolutely. And the problem is that it happens in like the first third of the movie or something and everything's kind of downhill from there. I have good things to say about that. I have negative things that I could say about it too. But
and then the Supergirl TV show, they for the pilot, had her catch a plane too. Yep. I think it's like a...
That's become a Superman trope. Mm-hmm. It's like you're...
Animated series to see catch a plane. Yeah, yep. So that's kind of the thing. You gotta catch a plane.
Superman's gotta catch a plane. But he says that as soon as he stopped it, Lois immediately is out of the thing because she was on the space plane for the story, and she's immediately out of it and is like, "Who are you? What are you like?" She's like way more driven and And before he can even say anything, they just have a moment where they kind of lock eyes, and it's very, the world stops for just a second. And then all of a sudden there's just a sea of people grabbing at him, and like a sea of people just hungry for him, grabbing at him, like just trying to turn him into, you know, all these questions. And he just bolts and goes back to Smallville and is like, it was awful. It's like everybody just wanted a piece of me. And then they come up with this idea. They talk about it and they come up with this idea of like, of they come up with the idea of Superman, basically. And then they make the costume, and his mom, you know, they come up with an idea for the costume, and then his mom makes it. And then the last page of the last issue, or of the first issue, is
that iconic,
Superman taken off, which is all to say a lot more
happens. Yeah. Even, even with 30 something pages, that's still
a ton. That's a lot. And it's, you
know, that's a whole trade. That's a whole,
that's an entire, this, I feel like how much happened in this first issue is what's going to happen in this entire Bendis miniseries.
Well, so with this miniseries, he's not trying to do those things with the origin and stuff.
He's not trying to retell the origin, but he is trying. It's not like introducing Superman for a new generation. It's not that. It's setting up a new status quo for Superman.
Right.
But it does have some of those aspects of, oh, I'm changing this, though. And
I guess time will tell if we get to see Krypton, if he reimagines the look of Krypton. Who even knows, like, with the stuff with Rebirth, did that touch Superman's origin at all? I guess this is what we're going to find out. I don't love the idea, just on the surface, that there's this villain responsible for the destruction of Krypton. Even though I do kind of love, in the animated series, how they tied Brainiac to the destruction of Krypton. But, and so I don't know if it's going to be similar to that or...
But Brainiac didn't cause it.
No, he just didn't.
He just knew it was going on.
And didn't tell
him. And was like, it's more important for me to get out of here with all of this information I have.
Right.
Like, I love that take on Brainiac is just, he's not like over the, he's not straight up evil. He's just like, information is the important thing.
Yeah. And it made the, conflict between Clark and Brainiac deeply personal.
Yeah.
Too, tying him all the way back to the origins, which is, it's always going to.
Which this is trying to do, but in a dumb way, I think.
I mean, time will tell. But just on the surface, it's like...
I'm also not crazy about, you know, even though I just said that about Brainiac, him not being like an over-the-top bad guy, I like, because it fits with his character of being, he's just logical. He's just
cold, calculating.
Yeah, he's an artificial intelligence, so he doesn't have that kind of thing. This character, on the other hand, Rogel Czar?
Rolls off the tongue.
Just rolls off the tongue. There's a name we'll still be talking about in 20 years. The idea that they're trying to make him like... I don't like what Bendis is doing here with trying to make him seem like...
He thinks he's a good guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this barbarian warrior.
Yeah. And it's like...
Almost the opposite of Brainiac. Very, very kind of emotionally driven, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And he's saying... There's like... And we haven't gotten the backstory on his... blah, 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 of like, because they say something in there about, we think you're too close to this. You know, your emotions may be affecting your judgment on thinking the Kryptonians, because the council basically, he's like, we got to get rid of Krypton. And the council people are like, also kind of reminiscent of Jor-El previously, Jor-El going, hey, the planet's going to blow up. And then that council saying, nah, it's just earthquakes.
Good catch. That may be intentional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say it probably is, but the idea that it's like, it makes this guy like Superman's, like an evil, or not an evil, you know, the like flip side of Superman's dad. That's like,
great juxtaposition where he wants to, hey, we need to save the world. No. And then this guy's like, hey, we need to destroy Krypton. No, we're not going to let you.
Yeah. But both times the councils are like, we're not going with your plan.
But Rogel, we don't know. He seems really old. Like, he's been around a while. He's been in thousands of battles, bathed in the blood of millions, I think it says.
Oh, boy.
But he sees himself as a hero.
They even say something in there about, you know, we appreciate the work you've done for us.
So like, he's helped somehow maybe keep peace or something.
It seems maybe like kind of one, it's a little bit Thanos-y of that thing of like, oh, we got to maintain balance in the universe That's the whole thing of this, is this guy just seems it's like trying way too hard to me to be, who knows where it's going. Look, this is all just based on my impressions from this first issue and the things I've heard Bendis say, and I will be happy to be proven wrong or to take any and all of it back if it turns out completely different. But just from this, I'm just kind of going like, this seems not as fresh and like new kind of like creative take on it as I would like. If you're going to treat it like with a thing where it's like, we're completely reestablishing Superman's status quo, this is a big deal, and then it's kind of like an idea we've seen before, is what I mean. If this was just like a story arc in Bendis's Superman, where it was like, oh, hey, this first, or like a second or third arc is about, oh, this guy, Rogel Czar, shows up, I'd be like, oh, okay, that's kind of...
Right.
We haven't seen this in a minute. But when you're doing it, when you're setting it up as, oh, this is my big... you know, light the fireworks idea to get things started is this thing that's already kind of like, it just, you know, when I, the first time I saw that, like the first picture they released to him, I was just like, this is the last thing I want. It's just like, oh, a big, ugly, bad guy from space. Great.
Yeah. Well, and what I don't mind a big, goofy, ugly, bad guy, but tying him to the destruction of Krypton is what makes me really apprehensive. Like, man, you've got to nail that in execution or else it's going to be like, oh no, what have you done?
I'm saying, like, for me, a big problem with it is like, you're saying you're wanting to go forward and like, let's move Superman. We're going to do this. And it's like, okay, so then don't start backwards. Just have this guy show. If you've got a thing, you just, it's also, I don't like the thing where it's like, oh, we made this guy that can totally beat Superman up. And it's like, all right, if your first thing is just, oh, let's give Superman a physical problem, you're missing the point. And I feel like that's what so many people do, where they're just like, okay, to make this guy a credible threat, we have to have him be so tough. That's why it bugged me in that, I don't remember if it was DC Nation or if it was in Action 1000, but where it's that story, and the whole thing is just, oh, it was in Action 1000, because it ends with Rogel Czar just stabbing Superman.
He does.
Yeah, the end. you know, that whole thing of him being the whole issue that whole story is just Rogel Czar just beating the crap out of Superman.
Right.
And it's like, there's so many more interesting ways to go. Like it feels like that kind of thing when people are like, oh, Superman's too strong. It's like, so they go, okay, we'll just make someone who can beat him up. Mm-hmm. That'll prove what a scary villain this is that it's somebody that can beat up Superman. And I'm like,
and we've seen it. Like we've seen Doomsday. It's played out. So we need something.
We've seen
more.
Doomsday multiple
ad nauseum.
Yeah. So it's funny. I was like, I was not wanting to be negative on this, 'cause I'm very curious to see where it goes. I will obviously be buying all of these issues, but it's just kind of a bummer to me that it's like, this is the foot you're starting off on. And even your two little like pre-steps before you're starting out also didn't fill me with...
No. Both the Action Comics and the DC Nation store, I feel like I would have just as soon not seen either one of those.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, one other negative thing I had, and then we can shift gears and talk about positive stuff, but I don't like the Lois and John are missing.
Yes. Oh, that was another thing I was going to say.
I don't like that at all. And sometimes comics do this a lot, this mystery that's going to unfold over several issues. Sometimes it's interesting. It pulls you in. Sometimes it's done well. Sometimes it stretches on way too long, and I hate it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of examples where recent examples. So a recent example, Jason Aaron, you know, who is the new female Thor? That was interesting. Oh, this is in the same book. That was interesting. Why is the Odinson Thor no longer worthy?
Right.
That got stretched on way too far. So these questions where the audience is kind of left out, we don't know, that can be done really well, and it can be done poorly and drug on too long. And again, Jason Aaron and the one book had both going on. So that's something interesting. But
right.
Because I thought the who is, you know, spoilers, it's Jane Foster, but who is the female Thor? And that was an interesting and compelling mystery to me, and it didn't stretch out too far. I think in 7 or 8 issues we knew, but the why is Odin's son unworthy thing got dragged out forever. But I'm worried where is Lois and John is going to be stretched on way too far. And again, just reading the solicits for this series, by issue the last issue we still don't know apparently. Which makes me,
of course,
yeah, frustrated. That's either going to be, we're going to find out in that last issue, or like you said, which I hope is not the case, that story will continue on into his regular Superman run, which I don't want that. I want it to find out one way or the other. Okay, you're going to, if you're taking them out of the book, just tell us how, why, so we can go ahead and rip that bandaid off and move forward.
Yeah, this is not the kind of thing to, that's like not the thing you want to drag out, I don't think. Yeah. But I think we could probably keep on. We could.
I want them to still be in the book. If they're not going to be in the book, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Tell us now, and then we can get over it and move forward.
Yeah.
But don't drag out.
But also, I don't want them to be. There's no reason for them to be gone. And especially like all the work that's been put into building them up and like making this. That's the thing I think I'm the most upset about, is that it's like obvious that these teams that have done so much work since Rebirth to make the Superman books, books that people are talking about again, mm-hmm. books that people enjoy, and like doing all this like character work to make characters, make these characters people are like into. People mm-hmm. are like, there's no reason. These books didn't, it wasn't like they were, you know, lagging and that's why they needed this. Like,
no.
They didn't bring him in to do this. They could, it was that they could sign Bendis and then they were like, hey, what do you want to do? And these, the people that, the teams that had been working on Superman for so long were like, still clearly had stuff planned and all of those just got thrown out the window to let Bendis take over. And it's like, the thing, and this also bothered me about it, is like a lot of the advertising stuff they were doing was with that, like, Bendis is coming, mm-hmm. was intentionally playing on the
Kirby
stuff from when he came over to DC from Marvel. And like, when I see that stuff and I think about how when Kirby came over, he brought all these new crazy ideas,
right?
And everything was like moving forward into something that hadn't been done before, something interesting, and like changing stuff up in different ways,
right?
Whereas this is like, oh no, I've got to change his origin, I've got to change the, and it's like,
I'm sure that, you know, Dan Didio and DC Comics want us to be as excited. You know, they don't have a Jack Kirby they can pull out. Yeah. But so this is their big card they can play. I'm sure the comics are going to sell really well. You know, and they certainly want people to be excited that he's coming. And it is exciting. He's one of the big names.
It's not as exciting as if it is, as it would have been if he had shown up, like, with the start of Rebirth.
Sure. Or we said this before during our Action Comics 1000 podcast. If there were other Superman titles, like he was getting a Superman title, not all the Superman titles.
Yeah.
I would have been more into that. The idea of him being in control of everything, and some of those other voices maybe not getting heard, and who knows. But I'm not crazy about that.
I'm sure we'll keep talking about this more as the issues come out, and I'm sure, because this is the thing that's kind of like at the forefront of what we're...
What's your biggest positive note from the issue?
I definitely liked Superman, some of the portrayal of Superman himself. It was very like... It was very much... When Bendis was making such a big deal of saying that, no, he gets Superman mm-hmm. and he knows how important Superman is and we need somebody like Superman now more than ever, I'm all about that. His handle on Superman's personality,
Superman's voice,
seems good. And it doesn't sound just like his, it doesn't sound like just where you could, with some of his stuff, where you could like switch the text in the bubbles around and they all just kind of sound like Bendis characters.
Right.
I liked that. And the art was incredible.
Right.
Everything else was an F minus. No, I'm just kidding. I'm very curious to see what happens next, but I'm also, this did not make me any less apprehensive. So he's got to win me over. I mean, that's like the long and the short of it is this did not win me over. He still has to win me over, and we'll see.
Yeah.
What about you?
Also thought the art was great. Superman's same, echoing you, Superman's personality was on point. There's some humor in it that I thought was good. So funny bits that worked okay. Yeah. I like Superman going around Metropolis, catching villains, rescuing people. All that work. The Daily Planet, you know, stuff was okay. I'm getting a little confused with DC Nation Zero, which I think is almost entirely Daily Planet. But sometimes those scenes run a little long to me. But I do like those interactions. I think that's going to be a big part of the story he's wanting to tell is going to happen there.
Right.
I'm glad it's weekly because. I can imagine being frustrated having to wait like a month until
the next one. No way. And hey, it's altogether possible that I may be misremembering that. The John Byrne one may have been monthly, but it was still, he was writing it and drawing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, or it may have been weekly. Maybe he was just a machine or he had like a lot of prep time.
A lot
time.
Of lead time. Yeah.
But this also seemed like it had a lot of lead time and we're still getting these extra artist names added after mm-hmm. the initial announcement.
Yeah, Man of Steel 2's got three different artists.
Well, we'll talk about that next time. So back when we did Action Comics 1000, we put out a call for Twitter questions, and we talked about the issue for so long we didn't have time for them. So since we're still in Superman mode, let's go ahead and answer some of those
sure.
now. So, at Joe Tips asked, when did the world learn that Superman was from another planet? I just thought about that and would love to know the answer. I'll hang up and listen. It depends on...
I was going to say, do you know the answer? Is there a canon comic book answer?
Well, there's a lot... it depends on sort of like which version of Superman's origin you're going from. Sort of like which era of Superman you're dealing with. You know, obviously, like Superman from the movie.
He tells Lois.
He tells Lois. He's like, actually, I'm from, you know, all of that stuff is just burned into my brain.
And that's canon as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yep.
That seems so perfect. Why would you?
Yeah. Why bother? Why change with that? But so like in Birthright, which I still think is the best Superman. I will stand by this until they make a better one.
Yeah,
Birthright by Mark Waid and Lionel Yu is still the best thing to give someone that's never read a Superman comic and go like, here's this. This tells you everything you need to know about this guy.
So how did they find out
and why he's so great? So in that, he knows there's something different about him, and he finds out when he's like a teenager, you know, about the same age as like mm-hmm. Man of Steel number one, where he's like. He knows there's something different about him, but he's never understood what it was. And then his dad shows the ship to him. And, I didn't say this, but it was a big deal in the previous Superman stuff where he's a baby that gets put in a rocket and then sent to Earth.
Right.
So he's born on Krypton. A big change that John Byrne
made. Oh, the birthing matrix.
Yeah, he's in a thing. They never even see him. He's not born on Krypton. The idea is that he is technically an Earthling, an American citizen... Because he's not born until he gets to Earth.
Well, I wonder, was the choice to do that just the amount of time it would take maybe to get across space? He didn't want to set a definite, he would have had to been a baby in a capsule for X number of years or...
I don't think
I wonder what the thought was behind that.
Well, I'm sure there's some kind of... I think it was just to try to take away this thing of they wanted him to be more...
More American.
More, yeah. Well, not necessarily Earth. More human.
So,
I think
so
that was a big thing.
He was created in the spaceship in the birthing matrix.
Well, he was, you know, it's basically like an artificial womb mm-hmm. that he's gestating in Krypton, where they have a baby has not been born on Krypton.
The movie Man of Steel.
They were doing that same kind of thing, but they actually had him be. So in Krypton, in the comic, in John Byrne's version, it's. A baby hasn't been born the old-fashioned way in, you know, like 1,000 years or whatever. It's all done scientifically, you mm-hmm. know, with they put the stuff together, and then there's like a big room that holds all these sort of like artificial wombs. In Man of Steel, the movie, they make a big deal of that Superman's mom actually has him the old-fashioned way, so he's like the first baby born on Krypton in forever, and then they immediately put him in the rocket mm-hmm. and send it off. Byrne made this thing of like wanting him to be born on Earth.
Okay.
So it's like the first time the rocket lands and then the birthing matrix opens up and then there he is as a baby. And it also also all in one issue. He explains all of this. He explains how they were able to pass him off as their own kid.
Right.
All this stuff. And it's just like.
So as iconic as some of that, as much of that burn stuff is, I feel like the placing a baby into a rocket on Krypton thing is endured more as like the image of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's because it was in the movie, you know, it's in the cartoon. But it is a big difference of like that thing of wanting it. But it's. So back to Joe's question. Whenever they find out,
oh my goodness, yeah, we got far from that.
So when he finds out, he like touches the rocket in Birthright. It's like, and all of a sudden things just start going off on it and like lighten up, and it like puts him in like a thing that like, you know, no one else can see what's going on, but he's like in a trance basically.
Right.
Like I remember that, in VR world, sort of like, this is Krypton. We're your parents. Blah blah blah. And then he's like, I don't like this. And I think they do a similar thing in the animated series where the thing just comes on when he picks it up. Then he is trying to help out. And then Lex Luthor figures out that he's from somewhere else. He's like, this guy's got to be an alien.
That's right.
And tells the press that it's like, this guy's got to be an alien because there's no way the stuff about him, yada, yada, is. So it just depends on which version you're looking at, Joe. And some, it's been like where he just shows up and he's like, well, actually, I'm from the planet Krypton. And, you know, I think Silver Age, that was basically what it was. I don't think they were as worried about it in the Golden Age. It was just like, wow, look what this guy can jump over a building.
Was Krypton named from the get-go?
Yeah, I want to say that in like Action Number One, they call it.
They do call it Krypton.
But it's literally like Krypton blowing up and him being shot away from it is like one panel.
Yeah.
They're just like, let's get to the business. Who cares? And that's what bugs me about some of these, like with Man of Steel, where they, or in like in anything where they've tried to put so much more importance on his Kryptonian stuff of like, and I think that Superman the movie is kind of to blame for this because
they spend so much time.
Well, yes, but also, but the whole reason they do that is because Marlon Brando was the one playing him.
Sure.
So they have to make it, that's like, it had to be important because you had such a, the biggest actor playing this part. So I think that's become more of a thing. And I think all that stuff, Grant Morrison nails it, where it's just like, yeah, none of that stuff matters. It's
six
like,
words.
Yeah, he's on this planet, it blew up, and then these nice people found him and raised him right. That's all you need
Superman.
To know. Superman, now go. You don't need to worry about any more, you know. That stuff's interesting if you fill it in, but you don't need it. So, Joe, I hope that answers your question.
So we're not the authority on what's canon, but we're going to say in this house, him telling Lois he's from Krypton is how the world knows.
Yeah, I disagree. I say we are the authorities. And the official answer from here on out is that he tells Lois, and she reports it in the Daily Planet, et cetera, et cetera. At Brand Med, Brandon Medley asks, Superman should have kept the rebirth beard. Yes or hell yes? You know, as much as I liked that look for like a different look for him when he had that other stuff on, as soon as he's back in the blue and red, I was like, yeah, the beard's got to go. Like when he's in that black outfit, I'm like, yeah, this is a cool look. I like bearded Superman, but it's just a little too much for when he's trying to be Superman and Clark Kent.
Right.
It's a little too.
If only he had like super beard growing powers and he could switch between them at will. I love the beard, but yeah, with anytime you're dealing with superheroes, the iconography, the look is so key, and I guess it would be pretty jarring for him to be in the red and blue. And
it's just also it's like one step further that makes it hard to go like for people. It makes it harder to buy Superman and Clark, like people not seeing it. Though I will say, this is like completely weird and random, but you know, Ariana Grande?
I know of her.
She's a, you know, she's like a Disney actress and she's like a
musician,
singer. Yeah. And for all I know, she's very talented. I'm sorry, I'm really not that familiar with her work, but I do know what she looks like.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's like she's very popular. It's like inescapable. And she's always got this like high ponytail. And I saw a picture of her, I didn't just see the picture. I saw a news story that was saying how like she did this new like magazine cover photo shoot where she doesn't have her high ponytail. She's got her hair down. And I was like, I know exactly. And the article was about how like people are freaking out because she doesn't look like herself just with this ponytail down. Mm-hmm. And just with her, you know, with her hair down. And I was like, whatever, I know what she looks like. This, and I looked at the picture and I was like, I would never have known that was her in a million years. You know what I mean? It's like, it really yeah. does make such a difference. And it does make you go like, oh man, you change. When people really know you a certain way, it really, it, just something is doing your hair different really can change how you look to yeah. people.
Yeah, I thought the beard was really cool. I can see that, I mean, what they've got 80 years worth of Superman imagery that they want to be consistent with. And yeah. I can see why they would want to get rid
of it. But if it's like, if Superman and Clark both show back up and they suddenly they both got a beard, it's like, wait a minute. You know, it was also, it was like the long hair thing, you know, in the 90s when he showed back up and it's right. like, you guys have both got long hair now. That's interesting. So I would say no. At Fizz versus the World asks, do you feel that Superman has a relatability problem?
I think that is something people think about him. But I don't think it's right, because in the hands of the right creators, he's absolutely relatable.
I think he has, I will say this. No, in that there's nothing wrong with Superman. I think the problem lies in how many crappy people there are. Like, Superman's relatability problem is that he is a guy who will do the right thing simply because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes some people uncomfortable because it feels so foreign to them.
You shared that, you know, Christopher Reeve interview clip.
I was saving talking about that. Oh, okay. Come on, Matt.
I was just gonna say, on the note of relatability that yeah. that, you know, he, yeah, I don't want to step on what you want to say, but if you seen the clip, he talks about him being the ultimate friend and everybody needs a friend.
The guy, so I'll talk about it now, but I was going to talk about that okay. when talking about that Gavin question, which you guys,
you've cut know. That. So they don't know what you're talking about.
Well, which is what I was about to say is like, I cut it out, but you guys will know what I'm talking about in a minute. So never mind. We're skipping that. We're coming back to it later. I think that his relatability problem really is that people, there's so many people who, but it's also, it's kind of like a difference in that there is like relatability problems between different cultures in the world, where it's like, there's like TV shows that they bring over that are like big hits, you know, in Japan or sure. in Europe or somewhere where they're like, this show is a huge hit. Let's bring it over to America. And then they bring it over to America and it doesn't work. And then they go, oh, we've got to change some of this stuff up. Or they don't even, they immediately change it before they even bring it over mm-hmm. and go like, oh.
Trying to anticipate
like what American audiences would, you know, would like or whatever. And it's like where they, you know, they would do these things where I could think of some like examples of TV shows or also I'll tell you that I heard a story. Someone was talking about how they had, they were in, someone was talking, this is on a different podcast. Somebody was talking about how they were in London during this thing. And I don't remember what the thing was for, but there was like a national moment of silence and it was like on TV. And it was like, he said he was so amazed because they had this national moment of silence and there's like all these people gathered for it. And he was on like some TV or movie set or okay. something while this was happening. And there were like, you know, monitors watching the news, talking about it. And they had this national moment of silence. And he said, it literally was just dead quiet. Everybody stopped what they were doing and everything was just, you know, it was for like a minute of silence. And he was just amazed because you could never do that in America. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you could get a group to be quiet yeah, for a minute, but if you had a huge nationwide thing and there's TV cameras, somebody is going to go, woo, you know, yeah. And then somebody else is like, oh, I want to get on TV for wooing. I want people mm-hmm. to hear me woo, even though we're trying to have this moment of silence for this like really serious thing. It's that kind of thing where that's the thing. That's the relatability problem is that, and it's, some people don't want to hear that. They would rather just go, no, Superman should be mean and be a badass with mm-hmm. laser eyes all the time and looking all, you know, he should just be totally kicking butt.
That would not fix any relatability problem.
Yeah,
sure.
No. Well, I mean, it would to some people. It would to people who are like, who wear.
I think the people that think they want that, if they had that, I don't think.
The people who are like, Superman's dumb, Batman is cool. And it's not that Batman isn't cool, but it's like that issue of Batman that Tom King did with Clay Mann, where Batman and Catwoman are about to meet Superman and Lois for the first time. It's that two-issue double date, like little story. But in the first issue of that, which I think is 37, is you've got that scene where Superman and Lois are talking about Batman, and Batman and Catwoman are talking about Superman.
Right.
And they're both just so... They both have so much respect for the other guy. And they're talking about all this stuff about, like, why the other guy is so great, basically. All of the stuff that Batman says in there about why Superman is so great, why he's so, like, why he has so much respect for him, all of that stuff. If that's not the take on, if that's not every writer at DC's take on Superman and Batman going forward, then someone needs to be fired at DC or something. Cause it's like, he gets, it's so beautiful and perfect. And it sets them up as guys. They both seem cool. Neither of them has to be cool at the expense of the other. And it also so perfectly, it lays out perfectly, like, hey, readers, this is why you should like these guys.
Right.
This is what they offer. And this is like...
I think that... I think that the people that think Superman's not as relatable... They're coming at the concept of Superman, and they feel like, oh, he's too strong, he's too whatever. But I feel like those people maybe haven't read like some really, really good Superman stories that can, oh, okay, now I get it.
Oh, I would bet that they haven't read many Superman comics at all.
They're reacting to the concept of it. But you could do that with anything. You could tell me the elevator pitch of some great movie. I mean, that sounds kind of... No, you got to see how they execute it that makes it so special. In the same way you put a really, really excellent Superman comic in someone's hand, they can see, oh, okay, now I get it.
All right, so I've got this movie idea I want to tell you about. It's this movie, and in it, this guy, this kid, he's not really popular, and he's friends with an old man, and then he almost makes out with his mom. Does that sound like a movie you'd want to see? It's called Back to the Future.
Right.
Doesn't that sound cool? I was like, no, that doesn't
sound
cool. That
sounds really bizarre.
What? That doesn't sound... Oh, and it's a family movie, you know? Or it's like, oh, hey, this got this idea for a movie, and it's about this guy, and he's a cop, and he's got a drinking problem. It's called Jaws. You know, like you could... Yeah. Like, you
so have I think, to see... I think people... The elevator pitch of Superman, they think, I don't really relate to that. Yeah. But if they could actually get invested in some good stories, they could see why he's endured.
Also, I think that's like so many of those people that say that stuff are the kinds of people who are, it's like they're repeating something they've heard.
Sure.
You know, like they don't really know. They're just like, that's my impression on the guy based on things I've overheard people say or whatever. But you see people also like, when you do Superman right, people really respond to it. And speaking of that Superman clip that interview with Christopher Reeve clip that I posted, I had no idea. That thing like completely blew up on me.
Yeah.
You know, like thousands and thousands of likes and retweets and all that stuff. And it's not like I'm some famous person to have like the reach to like I tweet something, then of course it's going to get a bunch of notices. It's, you know, like a lot of people noticing. That's definitely all just because what he was saying resonated with people.
Where'd you find that clip?
My friend Shane sent it to me on Instagram, like some Superman Instagram account posted it. And I was like, oh man, but it's from some, like it's from 1987 when he's doing an interview about Superman 4.
So it's like a TV interview. It's not a special feature.
It's just like some interview from some TV show or something. And the thing he says in that, and Gavin asked this question, what does Superman mean to you? And he, in the interview, the interviewer, which I'm not sure who it is, somebody said that they think it's Dick Cavett, which I'm sure all of our listeners will be familiar with. He's a famous talk show host. Anyway, he says, he talks about Christopher Reeve's academic background and his acting training background. And it's like, he went to all these like really hard schools and he was like he's done all this stuff. And he's like, you must have a very like sort of philosophical approach to Superman. what is it about Superman that you know, what does Superman represent to you? That, like, what makes him resonate with people? What does he represent to you? And Christopher Reeve's answer is, actually, you know what? Instead of all of this, I should just put in the audio of of all of this. So you'll hear this interview question now.
Philosophically, that's really the philosophical approach. Mm. You graduated from with honors from one of the toughest universities in the United States, Cornell. Then you went on to Juilliard, then went on to the Old Vic in London, then went to Comédie Française in Paris. You must have a philosophical grasp of this appeal that Superman has that's more than just a cartoon character. Philosophically, what does Superman represent to people?
A friend. And that's what people really need most. They don't need a strong arm, you know, one man vigilante force. You need a friend. You know, we're living in an age when people are basically afraid of contact with each other. They're afraid. People live in cities. They don't even know their neighbors. They're afraid to go out in the street. Something might happen to them. Basically, technology is against you. Life is overwhelming. Even the bank doesn't know who you are. You know, and it's like, we run around scared a lot, particularly those of us who live in cities. And America was founded on the virtues of a helping hand, of going 5 miles to lend your neighbor a donkey or whatever he needed. And I think that is that kind of virtue that's at the bottom. That's the heart of Superman. The genuine love of people, and that you always know he's your friend.
All right, and we're back. So having heard that, you know that he talks about what Superman is a friend. And that's so the perfect answer. He's not your dad. He's not the cops. He's not the king. He's not here to... He's not this, like, Christ figure who's here to tell you what to do and, like, to shake his finger at you when you do wrong. He's just here to have your back. And it's like, Clark is the kind of guy that, even if he didn't have superpowers, he would still be trying to help and do what he could because that's just who he is. And I'd never heard that interview with Christopher Reeve before.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before.
But it made it... I watched the first time I watched that, it was just like tears in my eyes because I was like, this is so perfect. Like, he gets it. And it's like, it really highlights why and it's like in the movie, that's the first thing he says to Lois. And even with him saying that, I never really like put it together. Like,
what's the line he says to Lois?
He saves her from the thing. Well, actually, the first thing he says to her is, "Easy, miss, I've got you."
Right.
And she says, "You got me, who's got you?" And then he just kind of laughs, which is so perfect. It's like, I know this is crazy, right? I love that idea of Superman being like, this is nuts, right?
Bendis, he would say that. This is nuts, right?
Yeah. He's like, can you believe this?
I'm kidding.
Yeah. You know, he's like, but he lands and he's like, gentlemen, this man needs a doctor. And then she's like, whoa. And he's like, you know, I hope this hasn't put you off.
Flying.
Yeah, it's like, what is it? Statistically speaking, it's still the safest way to travel. And she's like, really? And she's like, who are you? She's just trying to get some kind of words out. It's like, which you would be, which is exactly right. You would be dumbstruck. You got this, you know, giant, multicolored, handsome man has just done something that is impossible and is so like laid back about it. Just like
with a smile
on his face. He's like, yeah, I know this is crazy. Right. And she says, who are you? And he just says, a friend, and flies off. And it's like the way he does it all is so perfect. And that's what he is. He's a friend. He's not here to like, and I think that there's so many people that have a problem relating to him, to go back to that, is because they're like, oh man, if I could do that, I would be doing this and doing that. And it's like, he's like, no, I'm just going to go around and help. I'm not going to solve everything for you. That's not what I'm here for.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not here to take away your ability to do stuff. I'm not here to make you feel bad. I'm just here to help out where I can when there's something that's like a little too much, something that's more than what, when there's something that needs someone who's able to do just a little more, it's like, yeah, then here's this guy and he's always going to do the right thing. And no matter what, he's going to try.
And Superman's the one that's going to treat, you know, even criminals, even villains with humanity, with dignity.
He's
not going to be needlessly rude to them.
He's not going to just beat somebody up because he can.
Yeah.
He's, all of that stuff where he's just like, which that was some of the good stuff in this Bendis thing I really liked.
Yeah.
Was where he was, that language bit was like a little much. the part where he's like telling that little girl to watch her language or whatever. And it's like, this is a stressful situation.
Her whole life's burning down.
Yeah. It's like, just cut her some slack. I mean, it's kind of cutesy and that's fine. But like the part where he's just snatched up the two bad guys that are like arguing. I absolutely loved that part where the guy who's, I don't remember which one of them, it's like Firefly and
another one.
Yeah. One of the guys is like two fire-based villains, like low-level villains, and like it's like Firebug and somebody, who knows, not important. But one of them's like, shut up, don't say
it's
things.
Killer Moth.
Is it Killer Moth?
Because the guy calls him Moth, and he's like, Killer Moth. And,
yeah,
and
it's that's not gonna right. Cut. Yeah. But when the guy's like, he's like, you know, they're had it with you. It's like, now where's my money? And he's like, shut up.
You can't say stuff like that in Metropolis.
That's what he listens for. Like, he's like, what do you mean what he listens for? I know he's over. But that part of like, of the idea of like criminals knowing, don't say stuff like
that. So Bendis in an interview, that's going to be a big part of his run on Action, is like, how do criminals even operate?
Yeah.
And like, they've got a secret language. They've got a way they to get around.
Well, I did absolutely love that. And of course, the fact that they're like, what are you talking about? I did my homework. I know he's in wherever on the other side of the world. And then like next second, just boom, Superman. And he's just like, yeah, all right, guys, let's get out of here. Just, you know, that's great.
Yeah, so treating all people with dignity and respect.
Yeah, the way that he's, like, asking them questions and stuff. Like, I saw somebody else talking about this recently where they were saying that, like, you know, Superman is, like, just as likely to try to talk to somebody as he is to, like, run in punching them. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not just to fly in, like, fist first. And that's the thing that's great is that it's, like, Superman has the ability to do that because he doesn't have to be his powers are not a liability for story. They're an asset because you're able to, like, Batman doesn't have time.
You got to take him down quick, rope him up, then ask him questions
while they're dangling and scare the questions out, you know, scare the answers out of him. And Superman's got time to, you know, he's got the ease to be like, all right, guys, what's going on here? You know, like, and then they're going to start shooting at him or whatever. And he's like, okay, when you run out of bullets, then we'll continue this conversation.
And just like as a human nature thing, you know, I mean, a really good police officer, teacher, you know, whatever authority figure is going to do this to diffuse a situation.
Yeah.
Come in, ask questions with humility, with respect to all parties. Yeah. You know, it's disarming when someone comes in, you're all ready to fight, and someone comes in and they're calm and collected. And
that's the benefit Superman's powers offer him from a storytelling standpoint. It's like, hey, this is not like Spider-Man. This is not like Captain America. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who can deal with like people on all these different levels.
Right.
And it's, you know, but of course it's like, oh, but then when there's the meteor coming, falling from space, this is also the guy that can go, oh, now this I can just go punch.
Right.
But, you know, Batman's going to be out of luck with that one for the most part.
Right.
But he doesn't have to come into situations like that. And it's really like, hey, you could do a lot more with this guy than you think. And I think so many people, when they say stuff like Superman's not an interesting character because he's too powerful, it's like, no, I think your idea of interesting is just too small.
Mm-hmm.
Like your idea of, you're not thinking big enough.
Yeah.
It's not that he's too big. It's that you're not thinking as big as he deserves.
Yeah, I think the idea that of someone that can come in and diffuse those hostile situations is incredibly interesting, especially, I mean, just looking at our world. That we need more people that can, treat people with dignity and respect and diffuse hostility. And
If that's like a big hallmark of Bendis's stuff, I am all for it.
Yeah.
So we've still got some more questions, but we're going to keep talking about Superman. So we'll get to those next time. Just real quick before we go, I did want to read, because this is something we used to do on the old shows and haven't done it here in a while, or it maybe at all. And I just thought this was really funny. I've got two reviews from iTunes that people have left for the show that I wanted to share. And they're very different, but they're both 5-star reviews. And I thank you, people who left these reviews for them. And folks, if you want to write us a 5-star review or a whatever star review, I mean, preferably 5-star review, but if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, I really do appreciate it. And if it's, get creative with it, and then maybe I'll read it on the show. But Settle Chaos left a 5-star review that said, "The most friendly podcast on iTunes. Host Chris Haley is an adorable bundle of joy. His conversations with friends about comic books, movies, and other nerdy things make this podcast a delight to listen to. If you are feeling sad, then listen to this. It is the perfect pick-me-up. Also, this guy watched Mortal Kombat Annihilation every day for a year. How crazy is that?" Accurate. It was very crazy. But I don't regret it, I think. Then also, on a completely different way, but also kind of similar fun, Rick-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka is the name that this person left this review under. There's like 14 K's in it. The title is Dead Wife, Frowny Face. Not sure what that means, but then the review is, I guess that this is what he's saying. Despite an awful event that has left me a sad old recluse, this podcast brings a smile to my face. So,
wow.
Rick-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka, I'm sorry to hear about that your wife passed. That's sure a bummer. But I'm, man, if this show helps out with that at all, that's about as good a compliment as anyone could possibly get.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for listening. Matt, where can people find you?
On Twitter, @XAMattDrain.
Talking about life and comics and movies and all kinds of the usual stuff. You can follow me on Twitter @TheChrisHaley. You can follow the show @KICTMPodcast. And please do. And when you see us talking about the shows, thank you to everyone who retweets it, does stuff like that. I'm sorry if that ending on that last note was a bit of a bummer. I feel like I really, the look on Matt's face is like, your demeanor certainly.
Where are you going with this?
It looked like you just changed a little bit. And I was like, I thought that was like a really funny kind of, I don't know how serious to take that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, who knows?
Who knows? But it seemed like, I mean, if he's being serious, one, I really am glad if it helps, but it's absolutely. Also, but guys, please don't leave, like, don't make a bummer reviews to make me read them, because that would be kind of depressing. Unless you can really turn it around at the end. Unless you can really turn it around and not make it a bummer. But yeah, follow the show @KICTMPodcast. Thank you, like I said, to everyone that leaves iTunes reviews. Thank you to everyone that leaves, that tweets about the show and tells your friends. That is like the best thing you can possibly do, is just help them spread the word about it if you're enjoying the show. Also, you can get access to early episodes and stuff that's not going to be just on the regular shows. Sort of like bonus little mini episodes about stuff where we talked about when maybe people I was talking to, we didn't know we were rolling yet, or it wasn't for the actual show. I think that's probably where Matt's big Green Lantern pitch will end up, is on patreon.com/thechrishaley, and go to keepitclosetome.com for the show notes and all that kind of stuff. And there's links to all of this stuff. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a lot of fun. It's always fun to get to talk about Superman. We'll get to the rest of your Superman questions, hopefully soon-ish.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave you with this. Want to talk about Stuart Eminem?
Oh,
especially
yes.
On the subject of Superman.
Good memory.
And well, not a good memory. I wrote it down when we were. This was my list for last time when we were supposed to talk about it.
A short pencil is better than a long memory.
So, wait, what was that? A short pencil is better than
a long memory. It's just
that's a good. No, that's a good saying.